Prepare to be astonished.
It's that time again.
Let's get started.
From the Clatsop County Historical Society, an adventure in history with Matt Burns and Alana Quila.
You should never be allowed to talk to people.
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
And now, with today's adventure, it's Mac and Alana.
Good evening, and welcome to An Adventure in History. I'm Alana Quila with Providence Seaside Hospital, here tonight with Mac Burns, Executive Director of the Clatsop County Historical Society. And tonight, we have a very important guest.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, that's a good adjective.
So we should get right to it.
We should.
So let's whip through the history highlights. These are things that happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
So you can be smart, or if you happen to be a Jeopardy contestant, these might be
the
answers.
And if our important guest quips in, maybe
she can jump right in at any point. So these are things that happened tomorrow, November 22nd, 1718. Blackbeard the pirate is killed off North Carolina.
Ooh.
Arg, shiver me timbers. I kind of love this story. I mean, not that pirates are great, but they have captured our imagination.
Oh, for sure.
Through film and television. Edward Teach, also known as Blackbeard, is killed off North Carolina's Outer Banks during a bloody battle with a British Navy force sent from Virginia. Believed to be a native of England, Edward Teach began his pirating career in 1713 when he became a crewman aboard a Caribbean sloop commanded by pirate Benjamin Hornigold. That's a good pirate name, too, Hornigold. In 1717, after Hornigold accepted an offer of general amnesty by the British Crown and retired as a pirate, Teach took over a captured 26-gun French merchantman, increased its armament to 40 guns, and renamed it the Queen Anne's Revenge. During the next 6 months, the Queen Anne's Revenge served as the flagship of a pirate fleet, featuring up to 4 vessels and more than 200 men. Teach became the most infamous pirate of his day, winning the popular name of Blackbeard for his long, dark beard, which he was said to light on fire during battles to intimidate his enemies.
That would work.
That would work. That would kind of freak me out. A tall guy with a big beard and the beard is smoking.
I think it probably says something, too, about him.
Yes.
Yes.
but in May of 1718, the Queen Anne's Revenge and another vessel were shipwrecked, forcing Blackbeard to desert a third ship and most of his men because of a lack of supplies. With the single remaining ship, Blackbeard sailed to Bath in North Carolina and met with Governor Charles Eden. Eden agreed to pardon Blackbeard in exchange for a share of the loot.
Oh, well, there we go.
That's why I'm doing the full-on version of this one.
You liked the ending.
At the request of North Carolina planters, Governor Alexander Spotswood of Virginia dispatched a British naval force under Lieutenant Robert Maynard to North Carolina to deal with Blackbeard. On November 22nd, Blackbeard's forces were defeated, and he was killed in a bloody battle. Legend has it that Blackbeard, who had captured more than 30 ships in his brief pirating career, received 5 musket ball wounds and 20 sword lacerations before dying.
Oh, oof.
And I wonder if his beard totally burned.
Possibility.
Because he couldn't put it out.
That's your question?
That is my question. I know there's plenty of potential other questions. 1842, Mount St. Helens in Washington erupts.
1842.
Yeah. Oh, you pesky Mount St. Helens.
You couldn't give up.
It doesn't just happen once.
Doesn't end there.
That's right. 1954, the Humane Society forms in Washington, D.C.
That's a good one.
I like that one. 1968, the first interracial TV kiss.
Oh,
it was scandalous. Star Trek, Captain Kirk, and Lieutenant Uhura.
No.
Yeah.
I did not.
It was scandalous, apparently. And of course, you know the story of Martin Luther King. The woman that played Lieutenant Uhura, she was going to quit. She's like, I'm not that important on this thing, on the show. And he said, no, you are an equal. You're a powerful black woman. And you're an example. You need to stay on the show.
Good.
So she stayed. I don't know if it was before or after the kiss.
Yeah. That's great.
Captain Kirk.
That's good.
I wish it was somebody else. Because he's kissing everybody.
Oh, maybe not then.
He's kissing aliens.
Oh.
So. All right. 1990. Margaret Thatcher resigns. 2005, Angela Merkel becomes the Chancellor of Germany.
Okay. Yeah.
I can't decide if I like the title Chancellor or I don't.
It's different.
It is different.
Yeah.
But my history highlight of the day, and how could it be anything else, 1963, JFK is assassinated.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm too young. Don't remember it.
Yeah.
Read about it in history books.
So right. Yeah.
I can't comment.
You missed just a couple smaller ones.
Did
1847 in New York, the Astor Place Opera House, the city's first operatic theater, opens.
Ooh.
Nice. We like the name, of course. 1919, a labor conference committee in the United States urges an 8-hour workday and a 48-hour week. 48 hours.
Only Sunday. You only get Sunday off, I bet.
Right. So... thankfully they kept thinking about that one. But that was it. So, oh, well, there was the 1995 Barely History, the first feature-length film created entirely with the computer-generated imagery.
Pixar.
Any guesses? Yeah, Pixar.
Gotta be a Pixar film.
Toy Story. Premieres,
1995. There's a snake in my boot.
Yeah.
Has Tom Hanks been in every movie?
Yeah. He's got a good run.
I like that you dismiss anything that's like in the last 30 years.
Well, my history teacher in college or in high school, right, he said it had to be 20 years prior. And even then, it's subjective. But nothing that was anything, if it was within 20 years, then it couldn't.
So I think historians just need to take a bit of caution when it's something within their lifetime that they personally remember.
Oh, there. Okay.
But I don't think that it's off limits.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we see connections and make connections.
But maybe it's not history. Maybe it's an observation.
Well, I have an observation that we should stop talking and let guest talk.
We do. You heard just a few of her words there. But if you haven't recognized, we do have Sadi Hartman here with us this evening. Thank you for coming in and talking with us.
Thank you for having me. I actually have an additional fun fact for November 22nd. I have three siblings that say they have that same birthday.
Really?
Weird. They're in their 60s, their age, but that's all we'll say.
Oh.
Lasse Verenoja, Mario, Jakola. These are my oldest siblings. Lasse is a man and Mario is a female. And those names can kind of be mixed up sometimes. Mm-hmm. They're twins, fraternal twins. And then a year later, on November 22nd, my mother delivered.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yes. So I'm the youngest of seven siblings. So bless November 22nd is a hot day in the Verenoja family.
Three babies in her house.
Three. So technically 50% of her children. Well, you know, we're born on the same day.
And then she still had more.
On purpose.
Yeah, who would you think you'd stop? Okay, see, I was going to say, how is that even like the mathematics, statistical ability of three
twins
on the same day, but the twins make it more like, okay,
right.
That makes sense.
So. Mm-hmm. The fraternal twins came in first, and then my sister came in hot second a year later on the same day.
Okay, so with the excellent pronunciation of things that I wouldn't even be able to read and begin to pronounce, and it's kind of I think it might be a drinking game at home, things that I mispronounce or something, but... thankfully, I'm not going to try to pronounce any of those names you just mentioned, but do you speak another dialect?
I do. I'm fluent in Finnish. I'm a Finnish immigrant, so my whole family moved here to Astoria in the early 70s, and I'm the youngest. So we always spoke Finnish in the home growing up, and I still speak Finnish with all of my siblings and friends.
Yeah, so can you say An Adventure in History in Finnish?
It wouldn't have a direct translation like that, but minä voin sanoa, että tämä on ohjelma, että me puhutaan asioista, että tapahtui kauan aikaan sitten, mutta me puhumme niistä tänä päivänä.
Wow.
Wow.
Now that would take up a lot of our intro and
that would
outro
be like a minute
time.
Intro.
Well, Finnish people just draw all those words together and put as many vowels in humanly possible. So.
But now we can do a podcast and send this to Finland.
Yes. That's true. Well, yes. Because
we've got the title now.
Yeah. Oh, yes. I love that.
Yes. Interesting things that happened a long time ago. Do you think that's a good title?
Sure.
I do.
We might change the name to that.
In fact, I think that's actually much more.
So I just need to clarify. You said your family came here in the 70s.
Yeah. Early 70s. Yes.
1970s?
Yeah.
Or 1870s?
Well, if it was the 1870s and I immigrated myself, that would make me. Well, are you aging me right now?
Well, you said
do I look that old?
You said your family, and I wasn't sure when you said I am a Finnish immigrant, whether that meant like my family. Or,
yes, I came over hot with the whole family. Like
because you were all born in Finland.
We were all born in Finland.
You missed that part.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
So what led your family to come here in the 1970s?
Actually, my mom and dad, when I was about 9 months old, they came to the United States to visit my mother's brother, who had moved with his family a few years earlier to Minnesota. My Rahkola family, Antti Rahkola, Eila Rahkola. And so the short of the long is they came for a visit. They headed west, and they ended up in Astoria, kind of on a road trip. And the mill was booming. The canneries were booming. Opportunity was happening. There was a large Finnish community here. My parents went back to Finland and decided that they wanted a new start here. And my uncle was relocating here as well with his family. And here we are. So they were our sponsors, actually. So we lived up on Florence Avenue. So if you could imagine Raynon Riley Verenoya coming in with their seven children, my auntie and Ela Rahkola with their six children.
Oh, my goodness.
All of us lived in the same house.
Wow.
And my aunt Ela's mother lived with the family as well from Finland, you know, Annumummu. So that was a lot of people in one house.
I bet.
And it took my family about a year and a half to get the money together to purchase our home on Erie Avenue. And so the Verenoya family moved onto Erie Avenue right next door to the Oya family, which are not related. They're like Verenoya and Oyas. Nope, we're not related, but we moved on to the, what was called the South Slope of Astoria. That's right next to Finntown, Uniontown. So that's where I grew up, you know. And the first thing we did was build a sauna in our basement so that we could be like the other 80% of homes in Astoria that have a sauna. And a huge vegetable garden. So we grew potatoes in all of our food, and we, I guess, farm to table was a thing back in the 70s as well. So I recently actually joined the Astoria Co-op board, and that was something that I feel really strongly about in the community, in the Finnish community. We had this natural co-op where you'd fish in the river, fish in the ocean, and then we would bake all of our goods. And the other Finnish families kind of did the same version of that. Someone had chickens, someone had cattle. And we would go to each other's homes and be like, hey, Alana, we made a bunch of pulla, which is a Finnish cardamom bread, and you have some fresh eggs, and I have some potatoes. So this sense of community with the Finnish Brotherhood, the Suomi Hall, was a really phenomenal support system for the Finnish people that had moved into the area and wanted to make this home.
Oh, my goodness.
So there's like a dozen questions I have from everything you just Bring said. It. I didn't want to cut you off because it was pretty cool. About what age were you and what were your reactions to, I'm leaving Finland and I'm coming here? And did you speak English at the time? And who else in your family spoke English?
So I was really young. I was just a few years old, but I have siblings that when we relocated here, they were into high school. They were going into their senior year. So I'm the only one that doesn't have an accent. All of my other siblings do have a strong Finnish accent still. And it was an ordeal, but having the cousins. So with the Rahkola family, each one of us kids had one that was similar in age, so they kind of went to school together, so they had someone. And there was a lot of Finnish children in the area as well. I remember growing up in the neighborhood, Michael Oya was one of the neighbor boys, and Janice Kent, they helped teach me kind of the ropes on the English language, and then I catapulted into kindergarten. And they didn't have ESL programs back then. They put you into the special ed class a few hours a week, and that's how I learned to speak English at Captain Robert Gray School. And but going to the grocery store, the clerk spoke Finnish. If you were going to be a line lady at Bumblebee Cannery, you spoke Finnish. If you were at the plywood mill, and the managers all spoke Finnish. So we socialized at the Suomi Hall and with the Finnish Brotherhood. So for me, it was all kind of in the same, because you don't know any different. You don't know what you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. If this is how you were raised as a child, I didn't know any different.
How hard was it for your folks, though? I mean, because your mom to this day still speaks Finnish.
She does still speak Finnish, yeah. And it's a struggle. She understands a lot more than she lets us on to know. Let's just get that off the plate. So there's some wisdom there,
so
right?
So you're listening out there.
Yes, yes, yes.
Mom.
That's exactly right. You know, and she will be listening. So their English is, we call it Finlishka, actually. It's half Finnish and half English. And I think a lot of the community did the same thing. But, you know, that's a really interesting question, how that was for her, you know.
Because you were kind of at that perfect age where you were just learning Finnish.
Exactly.
So to learn English, I mean, that's kind of a nice time.
I was fortunate because I got to spend a lot of summers traveling back to Finland with my family. And so all of my other family, except for this one aunt and uncle, they're all back in Finland. And so I've gone back several times, and I'm really fortunate for that as well, to stay connected.
So what did your parents do when they got here? What jobs did they have? Where did they find employment?
My father worked at Astoria Plywood Corp, and I actually became a shareholder after high school there as well, and worked side by side with the men. There wasn't many women that worked there, and the work was very, very hard, and it was really smart of my father, because I realized really quickly this was not the job that I wanted to do for the rest of my life. It was hard, but, and my mother worked at Bumblebee Canneries. So that's what they did, you know, what a lot of people historically did in the area.
And just talk about the socializing at Swami Hall or the Finnish Society. What kinds of activities did they sponsor? What do you remember about going to those things, and what were they?
You know, I, along with the Scandinavian Festival too, so we were really integrated with the festival. I was a princess and then came back and was a chaperone and involved with that. The Finnish Brotherhood, I recall going out on the weekends there, and there would be a dance hall and there would be polka bands and lots of socializing. We do potlucks, and we would go there and spend time with other, and the whole family would come out. It wasn't like just mom and dad went out. In our culture, and I experience this when I go back to Finland on a regular basis, if you go out on a Saturday night, mom, dad, grandma, grandpa, kids, grandkids, everybody goes. And they have activities for the kids' table. I remember painting and drawing and just doing fun things. There was always food. There was the teenagers were there. Mom and dad were dancing. Grandma and grandpa were dancing. And we all went out together and went home. It was really pretty incredible, actually.
Was there a lot of integrating with other halls, like the Norwegians?
You had this, then yeah, they all kind of had their own version of that.
Okay.
And we all came together during the, with the Midsummer Festival, or with the, I was a part of the Scandinavian Dancers, of course.
Right.
As long as I can remember, we were up at Shively Hall on Thursday nights having practice at 7 p.m. Oh, so that's where you would see a lot of the other Danish kids and, yeah, and the Swedish and Norwegian and such. So they all, the Danes, the Swedes, the Norwegians, they all had their own version of this as well.
And was there rivalries at all? And as an immigrant, yeah, were you picked on or felt like you were ostracized at all, or was because there were so many other Finns and other Nordic peoples, did you not feel at all like you were different?
That's a good question. You know, I know that they carry some cultures carry grudges for generations. So thankfully, you know, I didn't experience any of that. We would, of course, it was just horseplay, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But that just came, you know, the Finns are stronger than the Norwegians. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, well, let's have a tug of war. And they would do that at the festival and things like that. But I personally didn't witness anything.
The story I always tell, and the reason I asked that, when I came here to interview for this job, I spent some time with a real estate agent who shall not be named. It's not a former board member, somebody else. And I was looking at the different houses that were available, and I'd warned them I may or may not be offered the job, but I'm just kind of curious what the housing market has looked like. And I was in a certain neighborhood, and I said, oh, this is actually a very nice house. This, I could see this working. And the person said, oh, no, Mac, you don't want to live here. This is where the Norwegians lived. Oh. And before I could think, I said, well, I have nothing against Scandinavians. And I listened to a 20-minute lecture about the difference between Norwegians, Finns, Danes.
Oh, did you actually use the term Scandinavian?
I did.
Oh, you did.
It just, I mean, it was knee-jerk. I was like, I have nothing against Scandinavians. And that was not the right word to
right.
be used.
So,
so I'm always curious if there's just some fun rivalry or whether at a certain point there was some real rivalry.
You know, I'm sure that my phone is going to blow up after this interview because, well, for a long list of reasons, because of what we're talking about, and because I say Scandinavian and everyone says Nordic.
Right.
That's what you have to say now.
It's the correct term.
It's the correct term. I got a lot of skin in the game, if you want to ask me.
I know.
But it'll take me a while to learn to say Nordic, because as I grew up, it was the Scandinavian Festival.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What are you? We're Scandinavian. Well, be more specific. I'm Finnish. Well, they're not actually a part of Scandinavia. So
right. yeah.
this is a whole yeah. other topic for another show.
Yeah, that is a good one.
That actually was part of the discussion. And we were sort of in the Historical Society was involved a little bit in that discussion. And creating the Nordic Park is where this mm-hmm. first
Absolutely.
Really kind of came up. There was this, what is Scandinavian versus Nordic? And that's when that shift was made. So it's
yes.
in the last probably 5 years.
Yeah, and I've lived here for 50 on purpose.
you chose to stay. One fun story. You do know my husband, Mark Quila.
Yes.
So
yes.
Growing up, you guys knew each other, and he was in Warrenton, you're Astoria. But one story you had told me was that you and Mark and Eric Paulson.
Yes.
Go ahead and tell the story.
So here we are, and we're all friends, and we socialize. Mm-hmm. And so I cannot believe that two of my friends here in Astoria, Oregon, this small coastal town, we make like a little pyramid in Finland where our families are from. So literally, Eric's family is from, basically an Eric Paulson, Violet Paulson, Wilt Paulson. Well, Violet's family is from an area called Rahe. I'm in Keski-Pohjanmaa, which is middle northern land, so Kalajoki. So Kalajoki is along the Gulf of Bothnia, about 300 some kilometers north of Helsinki. If you proceed north, there's Rahe, where Eric's from. And if you go directly east, not very far. I cannot remember right now, but that's where Mark Cuyla's family is from.
Yeah.
And it is not a far distance. It's like an hour and 30 minutes between the two. And so I would say, like, in that small area, the fact that this is our heritage, this is where we are from, and we are all friends here in this little town of 10,000 people on the West Oregon coast.
Forever. I mean, forever. For as long as you guys
have been. We've been friends for 30 plus years.
It's amazing.
Isn't that interesting? And that was something you had found out because you go back to Finland. And Eric goes back pretty frequently.
I do, yeah. And they're part of our extended family. Mm-hmm. And so we do go back. And it's just kind of a chuckle to think of, the world is a big place, people. Yeah. You know, and the fact that, like, the three of us live, our families are literally between the distance of Portland, Oregon, and Astoria.
From around the world.
And you ended up in Clatsop County.
And being friends in Clatsop County. Yeah.
So we've had both of them on the show and talked about why they stayed. Why did you stay? Why didn't you go out and go somewhere else? What keeps you here?
You know, I did leave after high school. I went to beauty school, and I actually was living in Portland and came back here to go to Astoria Beauty College with Arlene Jones, who recently passed away. She is a legend. A million thanks to her for bringing that school here. I went to Portland right after I got out of beauty school and worked in a salon there and worked up in Portland for several years. But when it was time for me to want to, I had hit this fork in the road with my career that I would go one direction where I would be traveling so much that having a family really wasn't on the table, or I could stay home, come back to Astoria and start a family, which I wanted to do. And that's what I chose. So in 96, basically 95, I came back to Astoria. I married Dean Hartman. We've been together for 35 years, married for 27, and I loved growing up here. So I wanted my daughter. I had a daughter in 95. Her name's Samaya Hartman. I'm a grandma now as well, but I wanted to give her the same childhood that I had. I loved growing up here. It was really a wonderful experience. And then I've had a salon in the area ever since.
Well, go ahead and plug it.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Oh, a Salon Vervey, but yeah,
she's pretty busy though too.
Yes. So. You don't want any more clients.
Call ahead, no walk-ins, please.
Well, actually, I relocated during COVID, interestingly enough, into, as far as I know, maybe I'll be corrected, one of the oldest operating salons in Clatsop County, who was run by a fabulous Finn Leroy Adolfson and David Drafal. So I closed my business down on commercial. I pivoted, as many of us did in the community. I now have a private studio in the back of 165 West Bond Salon that I've been in for actually a year as of the 22nd of November, which is something I just put together now, actually.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
We should have added that to the This Day in History.
Yes.
next year we'll make sure.
And you've had a couple locations. One of the spots was, it was kind of monumental. What happened?
Yeah, number 10 6th Street. And actually, this is the 11th anniversary. We're coming up on December 16th of that happening. And there was 24 businesses at number 10 6th Street. Number 10 6th Street was also Bumblebee International Offices. So I used to ride on the back of my mother's bike and go get her paycheck there, where 25 years later, I would have my business.
See, I love that. I miss that building so much.
I miss that building so much.
It was so McKinley nice. Cafe. And we could hear the water underneath.
Yes.
Of course I went there.
Yes, it was a tragedy, but something good did come out of that. And that pushed all of us into downtown quarter, right? Yeah. And then we really look at the revitalization that has happened in the last 11 years in the downtown Astoria area.
For sure.
It's been pretty incredible. You got to give a little to get a little, right? Mm-hmm. And so at least something positive came out of that.
So you said something that struck me. You said that you wanted your daughter to have the same childhood that you had. So what are the differences between her childhood experience in Astoria and yours?
Well, I think we'd have to ask her. There's another show. But we love the Finnish people love hiking, and we have a general love for the outdoors. And living here, to have access to an ocean, rivers, lakes, streams, forest, beach, mountains, it's all kind of here. Along with my mother and father were here. I wanted her to be close with them. And so they were very proactive as grandparents, and they spoke Finnish to her. It was actually funny when she started school, because when she was putting her words together, because here she has these two Finnish grandparents that are speaking broken English to her. And this is how she's grasping language. And they spent a lot of time together. So we had to bring in a little bit of work on that. Because, you know, when I was a little girl and I started school, when I would put my words together, if I say to you in Finnish, nice blue shirt in English, right? Ihana sinenen paita. Blue shirt, nice, you know. So the word is, the language is not set up the same as the English language. And so my daughter was kind of speaking broken Finnish English.
Right.
So it was kind of interesting at first. It was really comical, but you know what? My daughter can understand everything her grandparents said in English, where most people would be like, what are your grandparents trying to say right now? And Maya's like, they just want you to hand the cheese over to them.
Yeah.
She could just, so it's been wonderful for her. She just recently moved out of the area, and she actually would be somebody to ask that too, what it was like. But I think it was pretty similar to the things that I did as well, culturally. Sound on Wednesday nights, family gatherings, learning how to make the food that we eat and things like that. So
One thing that, just because I know you personally, you don't have, you're not upset that you were put in special ed. And instead, I think that you, because you've shared before that instead it taught you to be patient, and it taught you to be accepting, and it taught you that you were in that room, you were all equals. And so that's something that was, that can't be said for a lot of people. So tell us about that experience, especially as a child, how you were able to take something that could be thought of as challenging, and you turned it into something that was very positive.
I am actually, will forever be grateful that I was put into the special ed class to learn English, because I was able to walk into a different world that many other kids that enter public school system at that point weren't able to do, or maybe even today. I learned through that experience that we all learn in so many different ways, and there's so many ways that people communicate with each other. I was so young when I was in that program that I remember I was probably, by the time I was in second grade, I kind of started looking around going, I'm different. Like, nobody actually ever sat down and explained to me, like, the reason you're in this classroom is we're trying to teach you how to speak the English language. It took this woman, I was probably between second and third grade, to say, oh no, we're just trying to teach you English. Because I didn't understand quite why I was there. I knew I was learning, but you know, as a small child, you don't often put, you know, you don't connect those dots.
Right.
But being in that classroom, I ended up helping out in the special ed class all through school. And it was an incredibly rewarding and beautiful experience. And I will always be grateful for that, 100%.
Did it make you more empathetic, do you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, my name is Sari Susana Verenoia. Say that one fast, you know. So during sports, they'd be like, all right, they're calling out all the players. We got Amy Smith, number 54, coming out onto the court. And June, you know, Weber. And then there's a pause. and then you'd hear, number 22. And I'd be like, oh, that would be me, I think. You know, so no, that it was a really difficult time for people. My parents weren't planning on moving to the United States when they named their children. Coincidentally, Sari and Sorry kind of are close. So I just had to get used to people making fun of my name my whole life. And I just decided that was not the hill I was going to die on. You don't sit in grade school and be like, wait a minute, you're not pronouncing my name correctly. You need to trill the R.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So one last
request
for you, because this was our best show ever. Can you say best show ever in Finnish?
Paras ohjelma ikä päivänä.
There you go. We might have to bring you back, I think.
I love it.
Well, thanks for listening. Go make some history, and we will catch you next week.
Thank you for joining us for An Adventure in History. An Adventure in History is created and produced by the Clatsop County Historical Society and brought to you by KMUN.